Welcome to another episode of 40 Minutes in the Old Testament. 40 Minutes in the Old Testament is a 1517 podcast network podcast, meaning that you can go over to 1517.org/you-guessed-it-podcast, and you can check out all the podcasts that are there. There's a bunch of things for you to listen to. There's podcasts that are weekly, like this one, that come out every week or most weeks. There's podcasts that are serial in nature, which means you can just download an entire season all at once and just binge it. Of course, Chad, we've got done so many episodes now, 130-something episodes, that if you really wanted to binge this, you could binge this for quite some time. If you're wondering, though, that's a lot of podcasts and that's a lot of things. It's a lot of stuff going on over here. How is this all made possible? Well, I'm glad you asked. It's made possible by people just like you doing a little bit. A whole lot of people donating a little bit, making it where we don't have to charge anything. Everything's free. Everything can be given as a gift. So if you are interested and you are able, you can go over to Christ Hold Fast or 1517, go to the donate page, and you can become a supporter. And thank you so much to those of you who do exactly that. You are the reason that this is able to exist. Chad, by the time this releases, the Here We Still Stand conference will be fastly approaching. It'll be right on top of us.
Yeah, I mean, it's around the corner.
Yeah, Chad will
I'm almost packing my bags. I mean, it's that close.
By the time this releases, Chad will be thinking about what he's going to say. He will be writing his talk for Here We Still Stand. And maybe you're like, I would like to hear Chad's talk, but I didn't register because I missed out because it was sold out. But that's okay. You can still hear Chad give that epic talk. You can hear it. You can watch it live on the live stream for nothing. Also free. All you got to do is go over to any of the websites. Here We Still Stand, Christ Hold Fast, 1517. You'll see a banner and it'll say something about the live stream on it. You click on it and you just register for the live stream for free, and you'll get an email with a link when it's time, and you can just watch it live. You can watch Chad give that earth-shattering, life-changing, non-paralleled talk.
No pressure live. Now.
Yeah, you
no
can watch that talk. So that talk will be going down on Friday morning. You can watch it live. Go over there and do that. We'd love to have you join us virtually. All right, Chad. We're cruising right along in numbers, but not cruising along. We were just talking about this. We thought we might be able to stretch it and get 3 or 4 episodes out of it. It's just a bunch of counting after all. Not the case. Not the case. There's a little bit more numbers than even you and I thought.
Yeah, I was honestly surprised. I mean, when we were about to embark on this journey, I thought it'd be like, 90 miles an hour. Yeah, no problem. But, the more that we kind of dive in here, the more that there is to talk about. And we'll see even more of that today. We're at the beginning of chapter 12, and we're almost, I mean, we were like almost to the border of the Holy Land. And if you know the story, you know what happens then. So we got some more good stuff to talk about when the spies, kind of got a spy story today, when the spies go into the Holy Land. So yeah, it's a whole lot more than we bit off more than we could chew quickly.
That's right. So we're going to take our time on this thing.
Yes, we are. So let's get to it. Chapter 11, which is what we talked about last time, was not a very uplifting and happy chapter, because this is when the Israelites they go the Israelite way, and they're complaining some more, and then they complain even more, and God is losing his cool here. He strikes out, in fact, with a plague toward the end of this chapter. So things are not looking all bright and shiny for Israel. And if you're looking for a kind of a positive message after that last one, well, you need to wait a while, because we've got 2 or 3 chapters coming up here where things continue to sort of go downhill for Israel. But hang in there. There's some good news tucked in here as well. So chapter 12 is really continuing the theme that we saw in chapter 11, except in this case, we're going to narrow it down to a couple of people who are complaining, instead of the whole congregation of the sons of Israel. But there is an overlap between these two, because it's almost as if, okay, in Numbers 11, you got all these Israelites, especially the the riffraff, which we talked about last time, these folks who were not Israelites, who left with the Israelites when they got out of Egypt, they were complaining and murmuring about the lack of food, the lack of non-manna food anyway. So you got them complaining, all Israel joins in, and it sort of sets the stage for what we see in chapter 12. And another part of 11 that kind of set the stage for this, if you remember, God gave the Spirit from Moses onto 70 other people. And these people, they prophesied, and some with Moses too, back in the camp. And they became the helpers for Moses. They were those who would assist him in judging and taking care of the people's cases who were brought before Moses, because he was getting weighed down with all of this. So I think that sort of sets the stage for what we're about to see, because Moses and now 70 other prophets, if you will. I mean, they did prophesy. They were given the Spirit. So these are like kind of co-prophets with Moses. They're prophesying with Moses. And now, after all that happens, Miriam and Aaron, the brother and sister of Moses, it's as if they see, they're kind of watching all this go down. They're like, oh, wow, look at all these. There's a lot of other people besides our brother who's in the limelight. A lot of other people who are prophesying as well. And you know what? We're prophets too. So who's to say that Moses is like the prophet, capital T? I mean, all of us are prophets. And so what's the big deal about Moses? So they kind of get too big for their prophetic britches in this chapter, and things did not go well, especially for Miriam. Now, why just Miriam? Well, that's a good question to start off the chapter with. So here's what happens. I'll just read the first three verses, kind of set the stage. Numbers 12. Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married. For he had married a Cushite woman, we're told. And they said, so this is where things get, things go downhill. Here's what they say. Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us as well? And the Lord heard it. And then we have this parenthesis, at least in my Bible, it's in parentheses. Now the man Moses was very humble, more than any man who was on the face of the earth.
Which, of course, is hilarious because he wrote this book.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I. There are. This is my opinion. Not everyone will agree, but there are, in my opinion, editorial insertions here and there, in the books of the Pentateuch, that were made by presumably by later prophets, and that's my opinion anyway, and I think this is one of them. This is sort of a way that a person who's working with a manuscript later, who's a prophet, kind of tags this on there as to say, now you need to know this about Moses, okay? You know, his brother and sister talking against him, and Moses, well, he was like humility incarnate. He was humility par excellence. Nobody was more humble than he is. Anyway, that's my thing.
Right, because if you are actually humble, it just like seems impossible to write that.
Yeah, it's like the old country song. Oh, Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't brag about humility and remain humble. It just doesn't work that way.
No. He's so humble that every year they had a festival to celebrate his humility.
Yeah, not a good way to instill humility in a person by praising them for their humility. But anyway, so that's the way it is. That's the way it reads. So what's going on here? We haven't heard a lot about Miriam. We've heard a lot more about Aaron. You know, he, of course, the story where he screwed up big time was the golden calf way back in Exodus. And I don't think that we really heard anything about Miriam there. She came up when Moses was a baby, of course, back in the opening chapters of Exodus, because she's the one. So we know she's older than Moses. She's the one who followed the basket, the little bitty ark that was placed into the river, and made sure that when the princess found it, that she ran up and said, hey, can I get you a wet nurse from the Israelites? And so that's how Moses ended up being taken care of by his own mom. So we meet Miriam there. Of course, she's a sweet little girl watching over her little brother. Then we also meet Miriam at another water moment for Israel. You know, they cross the Red Sea and they sing this song, and Miriam also joins in. Miriam and the other women, they're singing this kind of an antiphon, kind of an echo of the psalm. And actually there, I was checking, I think, last week about this, it's there that she is called a prophetess. All right, so we know Aaron's a prophet. In fact, when God called Moses, he said, I will make Aaron like God to you, and you'll be like the prophet to Aaron, so you'll be his mouth. And so Aaron is put in this elevated office real early on. So, I mean, there's one part of their complaint that's true. I mean, they are prophets. Miriam's a prophet. Aaron's a prophet. Moses is a prophet. And now you got these 70 other guys who are prophets too. So what's the big deal about Moses, right? But that's only one. That's kind of a, I don't know if that was the main reason and this whole Cushite wife is a secondary reason, or if the Cushite wife was the primary reason and the whole prophet thing was a secondary reason. I tend to think that the main impetus for them speaking against Moses was they thought, hey, listen, this is a democracy. This is a prophetic democracy. And there's no way that Moses is even going to be first among equals here. He's just like everybody else when it comes to the prophetic gift. So who's to say that he should be the one leading Israel? Maybe we are the ones who should be leading Israel instead of Moses. So I think that's really the primary motivation that's going on here, because of what we're going to get to in a minute, because of the way that God responds.
And it seems like the Cushite woman thing, like, say you have a jealousy problem with somebody, and they're in a position that you think that you have just as much right to, you might then try to find something about them that other people would find displeasing.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is just my opinion, but it seems to me that the Cushite woman thing is just them. It's sort of an add-on in the sense that they would, I mean, you can see it happen. You can see, like, well, I don't know what's so great about Moses. And
look at that wife.
I mean, he married a Cushite. I mean, it's fuel to the fire. It's you bolstering your argument with some objective evidence that you think the jury of the people,
of the peers.
Yeah, of the people, yeah, would say, like, well, that is true. I mean, he didn't even marry an Israelite, so, I mean, it's not as though he's made all the best decisions.
Makes perfect psychological sense. I mean, we see that happening all the time, right? If you can't find any, like, real good objective evidence against someone, we'll just, come up with some kind of side issue and attack them.
Yeah, blow
attack
it up.
By means of that, yeah.
And, of course, that does let you know that it's a is it just that she wasn't an Israelite? So is this a... Because obviously you can convert, you know, so to a religion, and you could convert to being an Israelite. We've seen this happen, and no doubt she did. Is it just that? Like, well, she wasn't, like, you
she's
know,
not a pure blood.
Wasn't a good Jewish girl. Is there some ethnic issues here? Because Cushites were probably darker skinned. That's the consensus anyway among scholars. Is it that? Well, maybe so. And of course, if it is so, and it's probably so, that of course that's gross in a whole other way. That they would then say, like, well, you know the woman he married, you know, the one with the darker skin. I mean, it's not exactly preferred. Are the people of Israel above that sort of thing? Probably not. So there's a whole mess of things going on. I think that you're using this thing that's a non-issue to bolster your sort of argument against this person being above you. You've weaponized the fact that she looks different, and you've weaponized a little bit of racism in there. And so all of this is no good. And I think that's why we see God respond the way he does, where he's like, I'm not going to stand for this.
Yeah. God does not sweep this under the rug. He's pretty upset about this whole situation. And it seems that Miriam is the one who actually led the charge here too. I was looking at the very opening verse. I mean, the very opening word of this chapter is a verb, and the verb is to speak. So it's a Miriam Aaron spoke against Moses, but you would expect, okay, you got two speakers, so you're going to have a plural verb, right? Well, Hebrew has that. The grammatical form would be plural because you have Miriam and Aaron, two people speaking against Moses. But it's not. The Hebrew verb that's used to define the speech is a feminine singular. So it's almost as if you could translate this. Now, Miriam spoke against Moses, parentheses, and Aaron also was hanging out beside her while she was talking. You see what I mean?
I feel like there's objective evidence of why Aaron's not as good a leader as Moses.
Yeah, his leadership pedigree is a bit lacking.
It seems like he's
charitably.
I mean, have we not all been pretty awesome? Well, you did do the whole golden calf thing, man.
You almost did get Israel destroyed.
I could see why. I could see why Aaron might be like, I'll stand beside you. I'll back you up, but I think I'm probably not going to say anything.
Yeah, hey sis, I'll be there right beside you with my lips sealed. You say whatever you want to say. I'll be there for moral support. But yeah, I'm not going to dig a hole that deep anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is evidence. If you're wondering, I mean, why didn't Aaron get punished? You know, why is it only Miriam? Well, there's actually evidence within this story, even in the grammar, that suggests that this wasn't so much Aaron's hobby horse, that this was all Miriam. She's the one who's upset about this, you know, and who knows what the real reason might be, but I think all the reasons we talked about earlier kind of fit into the orbit of why she's complaining. So what happens? Well, God overhears this, of course, and it says that just out of the blue, God says to Moses and to Aaron and to Miriam, you three come out to the tent of meeting. It sounds like something a principal would say. You three, to the tent of meeting now. So that's where they go, and you can almost see like Aaron and Miriam thinking, oh no, this is not gonna go well. So they go out, and it says that God came down in a pillar of cloud, and he stands at the doorway of the tent of meeting. And he calls to Aaron and Miriam. So they come forward. And here's what he says. This is verse 6, 7, and 8. He says, hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, shall make myself known to him in a vision. I shall speak with him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my household. With him I speak mouth to mouth, even openly, and not in dark sayings. And he beholds the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant, against Moses? And it says the anger of the Lord burned against them, and he departed. But when the cloud had withdrawn from over the tent, behold, Miriam was leprous, as white as snow. And Aaron turned toward Miriam. Behold, she was leprous. So there's some interesting stuff going on here. This is a pretty key passage in the Old Testament, not just in Numbers, but in the Old Testament, that talks about the what sets Moses apart, right? And what makes a person a prophet? Because you got, if you read from, well, already beginning in Genesis, Abraham is called a prophet. I think that's the first occurrence. But if you read all through the rest of the Old Testament, you really encounter all sorts of prophets. I mean, they're not all cut from the same cloth. Even Saul prophesied. I mean, in some sort of frenzied, ecstatic kind of way, you kind of have that going on where it doesn't fit what we usually think of as like Isaiah the prophet. This is kind of something completely different going on. Then you have Abraham, who's a prophet, and he's called a prophet only because he intercedes. I think it's for Abimelech. It's way back in Genesis. He intercedes. So he's called a prophet in that way. But then you've got the writing prophets, the preaching slash writing prophets that we know from the latter half of the Old Testament. You got, you know, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, so on and so forth. So you got those kind of prophets. And there's various kinds of ways that God reveals himself to these prophets. I mean, sometimes it's in a dream. Sometimes it's in a vision. Sometimes it's like they're sort of have an Isaiah type experience where they're like the veil is pulled open between the visible and the invisible. And they're able to actually, almost as if they're sitting in the heavenly court where God is there with his angels, and they hear there, sort of in this face-to-face encounter, what God wants them to say. And then sometimes you have angels that come and speak with the prophet. So you get all sorts of different ways that God communicates with this prophet. You got visions, you got dreams, these angelic appearances, and all of these are different ways that God reveals himself to his people. Now, what sets Moses apart, according to verse 7, is this is not the way that God deals with Moses. He doesn't speak with him in these sort of visions or dreams or anything like that. Instead, he speaks with him peh el peh in the Hebrew, mouth to mouth. So it's kind of the picture of, I don't want to say equals, because of course there's no way Moses and God are equal, but the picture, the metaphor that's used is of two equals coming together, two friends, if you will. And just like you and your friend are standing face to face, talking to, we say face to face, they would say mouth to mouth. So one person standing right in front of the other person, and they're talking, and it's not just a monologue either, because of course Moses talks back to God. I mean, he talks to God, and sometimes he talks right back to God, challenging God and interceding for Israel. So only with Moses does God act this way. He doesn't speak in riddles. He doesn't speak in dark sayings. He doesn't speak in visions or dreams, even though those are all legitimate ways that God can speak to his servant, other servants, the prophets, but not so with Moses. With him, everything is different. He's the one with whom God speaks face to face or mouth to mouth. And because of that, because he explains it in this way, he makes it known to Miriam and Aaron that, hey, you may be prophets. Those 70 others may be prophets. There's going to be a whole lot of other prophets that come after Moses. Great prophets, eloquent prophets, very insightful prophets, prophets of wisdom and prophets of warning and prophets of repentance and all sorts of prophets. But there's not going to be another prophet like my servant Moses, at least not until the prophet of prophets comes, which actually we'll hear about later in Deuteronomy. This prophet like unto Moses who will come, which is the Messiah. So of all the prophets in the Old Testament, Moses is the one who's set apart above all the other ones. And so to speak against him and more or less to say, hey, I'm just as good a prophet as Moses is to invite disaster. And that's the kind of disaster that we see here happen with Miriam, because when the cloud disappears, she's covered with leprosy.
Yeah, I mean, so you see people, like you were saying, prophesy all over the Bible. There's a difference between being sort of a little p prophet and a big p prophet. You know, and we know who those guys are. There are sort of prophets, and there is then the prophet of his day. So, you know, someone like Isaiah is the prophet, or Elijah is the prophet. This is not the same as some guy who, you know, happened to prophesy one time. These are sort of the mouthpiece for God in their day, and Moses is certainly that. And even the mouth to mouth thing it alludes to Moses' mouth and my mouth are the same. So you might prophesy now and then, but like when Moses talks, that's me talking. Mm-hmm. Those are my words, right? Yeah. That is not necessarily the case for everyone else. That's not the same thing. So, to say, like, hey, I mean, I prophesied once. I'm just like this guy. He's like, no. Like, he is, Moses is the one, when I have something to say to the entire people, and it's important, when Moses opens his mouth and conveys it, that's me. Those are my words. I think that you have that happening all throughout the scriptures. Obviously, Moses is the great prophet of prophets. But even in other instances, you have the prophet, and then you have sort of, you know, lowercase prophets going on.
Yeah. So that's why, in this particular case, things turned out so badly for Miriam, because she was misunderstanding the whole distinction that you're making there between the prophet and the smaller prophets, and basically putting herself on par with Moses. Not a good idea.
Yeah, and in this sense, this is a crazy thing that God feels like to question Moses is to question him.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it boils down to, and explains the reason that he acted the way that he did. Because this was a sin against Moses. She was speaking against Moses, but really what she was doing is she was speaking against God, right?
Right.
I mean, it's kind of like what happens in the New Testament when Jesus sends out his disciples. He who hears you hears me, right? He who rejects you rejects me. So as the mouthpieces of the Lord, to reject that mouthpiece is to reject the one for whom he speaks. So they were rejecting God's chosen mouth, his means of conveying his will to the people.
Yeah, I mean, sort of like when Peter, this happens with Peter, when, you know, we talked about this bunch before, but when Ananias and Sapphira bring the gift and he says, "Why have you lied to God?"
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, they lied to you. And it's the same thing in that situation.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's the way God works, right? He, even though he did speak a few times in the Old Testament, just like his voice out of the heavens, most of the time that's not the way God works. In fact, very, very, very rarely does God work that way. We have a couple of instances in the New Testament, for example, the baptism of Jesus. But if you look through the Bible at the number of times that God's voice booms out of heaven, you can search far and wide. It doesn't happen very often. Instead, what you see is God, well, he works the same way that he does today, right? He co-opts the mouths of people to speak his word. That's just the way that God functions. He works through means. And that means, and sometimes in the Bible, it's through angels, right? His messengers.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's through human messengers. But that's the way that God likes to work.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
if someone is speaking the word of God, then that's God speaking.
Yeah, and even in instances where he does, I mean, like, you know, the baptism of Jesus, there's a voice from heaven. We're not sure that anyone but John even hears that. You know, so like it definitely seems like it comes from heaven, but there's not any evidence that anyone else other than John saw or heard that. We know he did,
yeah.
But I mean, John the Baptist, who, by the way, was a prophet. I don't know that anyone else even heard it.
Yeah, and I'm kind of glad that God works that way, because if I heard a divine voice booming out of the clouds, I'd probably just die.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be like over for me. And you see that at Mount Sinai. The Israelites beg that no further words be spoken to them from God. Instead, they said, "Let Moses talk to us." Right. So, if you're kind of waiting around thinking, "Oh God, just, you know, speak to me from the clouds," you might want to think again, because that didn't turn out so well for Israel. Instead, you know, go to somebody who speaks the words of God. That's where he wants you to listen. Put your ear to the mouth of the preacher, or put your ear to the mouth of a brother or sister who's speaking God's words to you. That's the way that God likes to communicate.
I do love how God is going to do this, though. So he does this leprosy thing, but his fix for the leprosy is great, because it just takes care of this whole issue.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, okay, so Miriam has leprosy. What are we going to do about it? Well,
I guess you just grab any old prophet.
Yeah, right. you got 70 choices in the camp. Just get one of those guys, right? Because after all, a prophet's a prophet.
Yeah, we're all equal here.
Yeah. Yeah, so what happened? Well, Aaron, first of all, Aaron cries out, you know, he finally opens his mouth, Aaron does, and he opens his mouth. And I love the way he calls Moses, "Oh, my Lord." He didn't say, "Hey, bro, yeah, hey, brother, can you do something about this?" He calls him Adon, which is the Hebrew word for Lord or Master. So, oh Lord, I beg you, do not account this sin to us, because we've acted foolishly. Yeah, no kidding, and we've sinned. Yeah, that's right, you did. He says, don't let her, Miriam, don't let her be like one dead whose flesh is eaten half away. So what are you going to do? Well, who is going to intercede for Miriam and Aaron? Well, who else but Moses, right? So the solution is to turn to the prophet, to God's spokesman, to the one against whom they were sinning, which is another aspect of this that I really appreciate, is that the very one against whom they sinned, the human one anyway against whom they sinned, Moses, now turns around and he is the one who intercedes for Miriam.
Yeah, there's a very Christological thing going on there.
Yeah, it's like, you know, if you think if you see your sins and the judgment they deserve, and you're frightened of God, well, to whom can you turn? Well, to God, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
God is our defense against that.
One time someone asked my father who's been a pastor been a pastor for a very long time, but asked him, how do you know when you've forgiven someone? And he said, well, I think you know you've forgiven someone when you pray for them.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty good metric.
That's a very good metric. Yeah. And it doesn't mean that you have to feel warm and fuzzy inside when you do that. But the very act of interceding for someone that has sinned against you, yeah, that's a pretty good metric to indicate that you have forgiven that person. We've talked about that before off the podcast. And I've tried to do that with some folks that have sinned against me. And it's very true. You know,
it's very difficult,
really
too.
It's really hard to think, you know, I hate this person. Oh, God, help them. Those two things just don't go together, right? So,
and this is exactly what we see Jesus do.
Yeah, that's even on the cross, right? That's he's interceding for the very ones who put him to death. Yeah. So that's what Moses does here. Oh God, I heal her. I pray. A very messianic act, a very Christ-like act here, in which Moses intercedes for those who spoke against him. And God does forgive, even though there is repercussions from this. God is, in verse 14, says, look, Moses, okay, but if her father had spit in her face, if he had shamed her in that way, she'd bear her shame for 7 days because of that. So here's what's going to happen. She's going to go outside the camp. She'll be ostracized. She'll be outside the holy, the sacred borders of the camp for 7 days. And then after that, she can come back. She'll be received again. And that's what happened. So Miriam is shut up outside the camp for 7 days, and the people didn't move until Miriam was received again. So they wait. So there was a limit, 7 days, and after that, everything is good. Miriam is received back, and only then did the people move on to the next camp. So it's a really interesting chapter in a lot of different ways, just as from the perspective of the various ways that sin manifests itself. And also the way that God deals with that through the intercession of the one that was sinned against.
Yeah, it's I think there's something really cool about them, you know, as she's put outside the camp, they wait for the sinner to return. They're not like, well, you know, catch up.
Yeah.
You know, or they're moving along and she has to, you know, trail back, you know, a mile or whatever. Now they wait. And I think that's instructive that you are waiting for the sinner to be able to enter your midst again. Mm-hmm. So there's not like this all healer, but you know she can't be part of the group anymore. Like so, she has to go. You know, this maybe Moses, he has Moses heal her, and then but she's not allowed to be part anymore. You know, or she has to go. You know, she has to go somewhere else. No, there's consequences, but she's also welcome back at the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great example of how the community acts in love toward the person who, for whatever reason, is outside the camp, whether that reason is physical or spiritual or something else. They wait because she is that action alone is indicative of the fact that she is an integral part of the community. And yes, she sinned, and yes, she's dealing with the ramifications of that. But Israel is not going to really be Israel unless they wait for that sinner to return. And that's what they do. And then it's behind them. There's no indication this ever comes up again, and it's time for them to move on.
Yeah. And it's strange that, you know, the Moses' wife is not, she's brought up, you're saying, the beginning of this, but not again. And it does seem like this was sort of just a tool that they were using, or Miriam was using, in to a different end. That there's an issue here, and that's just one of the things that, you know, she brought up. And I have to believe the fact that it's even brought up, that she brought it up, also tells you that God was not too pleased with it. This was not a tactic that he approved of.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Like, are you seriously attacking this dude's wife? As like, what?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's bad enough to attack a person, but when you start involving their family, then it gets down and dirty really, really fast. I mean, we see that playing out in our own communities and families and on a national scale. I mean, that seemed to be an element of human nature, one of those ugly, ugly elements of human nature where, you know, it's bad enough to attack another person, but when you pull their family into it, then yeah, that's pretty low.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why, I mean, sort of throughout history, like, family's sort of been off limits.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, it's like one of those unwritten rules, like, you know, you can attack a guy, but you start attacking his kids or his wife, then you have crossed the line. And that's what happened here with the sister-in-law, right? With Miriam's sister-in-law.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it, man. We have wrapped up another chapter.
Moving along. All right. So next time we'll see what happens with the spies as they enter into to check out the Holy Land, and then what happens when they get back.
I like a good Israeli spy thriller.
Yeah, that's what it is.
So, we're sort of introduced to somebody that we're going to hear a whole lot more about later.
Yeah, that's right. We get to meet Jesus. I mean, Joshua. Joshua, Jesus.
Boy, a little slip there.
Yeah, a little slip of the tongue there. Yeah, the successor to Moses, Jesus, also known as Joshua. We'll see what happens with him.
All right. Well, guys, if you want to hang out virtually at Here We Still Stand, which will be this weekend when this releases, it'll be the weekend. It'll be Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Go over and sign up for that live stream. I mean, you're up against it at this point, so you get in there and register up for that. It's free. We'd love to know that you were watching. Chad, I will see you in San Diego doing
face
this live.
Face.
Mouth
that's
to
right.
mouth. Well, that's a little weird.
Yeah, face to face at least, right?
Oh, that's right. All right.
All right, man.
See you then.
See you there.